Good morning, Spokane. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM, also streaming live on kyrs.org to anyone around the world. This morning, the program's Praxis, and we're live in the studio. We're going to be talking about the upcoming panhandling ordinance that is in front of City Council tonight that has been basically declared to be a unanimous vote for this panhandling ordinance. And I think Dave Bilzen's going to join me in the studio in just a minute or two to talk about the specifics of this ordinance and what's really going on. Basically, the proposed ordinance would outlaw certain types of panhandling, roadside panhandling. So it would outlaw stepping into certain main streets to take money or goods from vehicles, applying to state routes, on and off ramps, principal arterials, or the first 100 feet of a road that intersects with any of those type of roads. So that's according to the Inlander, by the way. It's not directly from the ordinance, but that's what's being debated here. And the argument from the city and from, you know, proponents of it is that it's a public safety issue, that we can't have people stepping into the streets to take things from cars. And that's interesting because there's already pedestrian safety laws that I would think cover that kind of behavior, that if you want to, you know, prosecute someone or go after them to keep them safe because they're stepping into the road, then you can already use the existing pedestrian laws for that purpose. So that's the first hole in this thing that I see. And then, I mean, today I'm going to talk about panhandling ordinances in other cities and what kind of effect they have. But generally, the effect is to, you know, push this undesirable element out of the downtown corridors. And that's really what many on the council are saying outright, is that it's bad for business to have this unsightly, you know, this blight of poverty on our downtown center, where we want people to be shopping, enjoying themselves, generally not thinking about the poverty that's around them. So I wanted to read something that a friend of mine posted on Facebook that I thought was pretty great about this, but I'll have to track it down. So basically, that's the panhandling ordinance that's up for us. And part of the argument, so the ACLU of Washington has said that it's constitutional, as has the Center for Justice, which is a local nonprofit law firm that does a lot of work in this area. And the issue as to whether or not it's constitutional isn't really the main issue to me either, because while it's unconstitutional to declare that people can't ask for money because it's protected under free speech, that doesn't make it a good law to push poor people out of sight, out of mind. So this is a friend's sarcastic rendering of the ordinance that I meant to open the show with but didn't have it pulled up. Whereas the Spokane economy is a manifestation of the larger U.S. economy, and whereas the U.S. economy is an example of severely failed economic policies, and whereas the men and women of the Spokane City Council declare tonight, 7-0, that it is a diehard band of believers in the capitalist economy, and in particular of the downtown core run by entrenched local and national economic interests, and whereas unemployment continues at devastatingly high levels that we are hopeless to remedy or even propose serious critiques or proposals of, and whereas we have already decided 7-0 to pass this thing and move on, we do hereby throw our hands up in the air and declare further war on the bum on the streets, and a tip of our hat to Spokane native Utah Phillips, to the bum on the rail, and declare Spokane closed for business unless you are a full-fledged member of the Fresh Face and Clean Downtown Partnership. So that's a friend's interpretation of this new ordinance, and I don't think it's entirely unfair. Hopefully later on in the show, we'll have Council President Ben Stuckert calling in to give his interpretation of this. I want to offer a fair hearing for the city trying to pass this ordinance. Something that there was a rumor going around that it was an ordinance the likes of which we see in various towns. Phoenix struck theirs down, or perhaps it wasn't Phoenix, but many have passed laws that require basically a permit to panhandle, and they're usually a photo ID identifying you as a panhandler that you need to wear at all times while asking for money in the streets. And that's in Minneapolis. That's the one I was thinking of. So there was a rumor that that was part of the ordinance that's going on in Spokane. It's not right now, but it's difficult because when things like this begin to be passed, it's kind of a slippery slope where people become used to that as the status quo, and then worse and harsher laws get voted in after the fact. We see that all over, really in every facet of the government. So this is an article from 2005. It's rather old, so I don't know if they still have this law or not. I'll need to look into it. But this is from the Associated Press in 2005. Panhandlers on Minneapolis' busy street corners may soon carry more than the cardboard signs that spell out their pleas for money. If the police chief has his way, they'll have photo IDs hanging around their necks. Chief William McManus wants to license panhandlers, saying it would make it easier for officers to manage aggressive begging in Minnesota's largest city. Anyone failing to wear an ID badge would be jailed for 30 days and possibly fined. The idea is not to penalize people or make them go away, quote, he said. It's just a way to govern how they conduct their business. A badge with their picture on it should make them less likely to engage in aggressive panhandling, end quote. Panhandlers wouldn't have to pay to be licensed, but they would have to register each year at a government center and have their picture taken. The city already bans panhandling in front of cash machines, bus stops, and restrooms. And I'll pause here. Many cities have regulations such as that, that ban panhandling in a variety of locations, including schools, parks, ATMs, bus stops, which in any major neighborhood kind of cancels out the entire neighborhood by default. Continuing this article, if such a city law were to pass, Minneapolis would join a handful of other cities that license beggars, such as Cincinnati, Dallas, and Greensboro, North Carolina. Cincinnati's licensing ordinance is being challenged by civil liberties groups who claim begging is protected speech. And that's what we were just talking about a second ago. So basically, and then they actually talked to a couple folks who panhandle. So Robert Yellow Wolf, who stood along an Interstate 94 off-ramp southeast of downtown on April 27th, said he would probably register for the license, but he called the plan, quote, ridiculous. Quote, if they say we have to do it, well, we have no say anyway. When you're homeless, you have no say, end quote, said Yellow Wolf, who grew up on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Yellow Wolf said he was struggling to find a job because of a stint in prison for armed robbery and assault. Last year, the city council adopted an ordinance that bans aggressive begging, but critics say it hasn't done much to curb the practice. Let's see. So then they talk about, you know, would people get this license? Would it add to the humiliation of being on the street and being forced to ask for money or choosing to do that? And another woman at the end of this article points out, she says, it's not right. She would only give her first name, Tammy. Quote, as soon as you put on a badge, you know the police will see it and they'll come right over and pick you up. So for many reasons, that's a problem, the licensing law. And partially, you know, some people do have warrants and issues like that, so they'd be worried about being identified. I don't really want to open that can of worms too far, but it just seems like a pretty intense example of trying to manage, you know, the quote-unquote problem of homelessness rather than trying to solve it in a real way, because the conversation that you're seeing more and more, thankfully, in the last few years, but we've seen it before and then it dies away again, is, you know, why are there so many homeless people? Why are there so many people in the streets asking for money? It's not because, unfortunately, a common response to that is still, I don't understand why people don't understand the fact of the matter, but is that, you know, people are lazy. They don't want to get a job. They just want to do this as an easy way to make money. I don't personally think it would be easy to stand on the street and ask people for money all day. I think it would be pretty tiresome. But yeah, so that argument causes a lot of problems for me, because I was just talking with a good friend of mine last night and he said, well, you know, people should get a job. And I tried to talk to him about there really are no jobs to get for a lot of people. I mean, I have friends who are, you know, graduating with high-level degrees and all the qualifications in the world and can't even find a job in, you know, customer service or retail or food service, which are the fastest growing sectors in our economy right now. Those are really the only job, the only occupations that have significant growth right now. That's from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I'm not just making it up. And the thing I was thinking about today, I was reading kind of these statistics to see, you know, can these people who are on the streets just go get a job? Retail salespersons, this is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, does an annual report on occupational employment and kind of the employment outlook. And I've used this before. It's all public. It's all good data that they take a lot of time to collect. And it's a good place to dig around. Last week, I interviewed Keith Quincy, who's a former Eastern Washington University professor who wrote a book called Worse Than You Think, where he recalculated the stats for unemployment, inflation, GDP, based on the old formulas before many changes were made. So, and he goes to the Bureau of Labor Statistics for his raw data to recalculate these rates, including everyone. Because unemployment, for example, doesn't include those who are long-term unemployed, which is they've been actively seeking work and not working for at least a year. So that's a large population, and they get dropped from the numbers, and the numbers kind of look a little more steady than they actually are, because those long-term unemployed continue to stack up, and the numbers continue to stack up, but we don't really see that reflected. So in short, Bureau of Labor Statistics website is bls.gov, and they have a lot of the raw data. And if you're willing to just look through their tables, the story kind of starts to reveal itself after just a little while. So according to that website, retail salespersons and cashiers were the occupations with highest employment in 2011. So if we think about, you know, the population that's often panhandling and the homeless population in general, we have a high number of people with mental health concerns and a high number of people with serious addictions, and a large amount of people who are either veterans who've been disenfranchised by that system, or felons who, you know, are the only group that can be legally discriminated against in most places. So you look at that group and you think about what employers are looking for in retail sales and cashiers. They're kind of looking for, you know, social adjustment and things like that, and, you know, social abilities that a lot of people might not have after, you know, trauma and after being on the street. And to go in for an interview for that, you know, appearance is a large part of it, and there's many factors that kind of prohibit people from doing these retail sales jobs and cashiers in some places. So the 10 largest occupations, which accounted for more than 20% of total employment, in addition to retail and cashiers, the largest included general office clerks, combined food preparation and serving, including fast food, registered nurses, which obviously requires a degree of education, waiters and waitresses, and customer service representatives. So that's the really exciting outlook for future jobs for young people out there. And most of these largest occupations are relatively low paying. Of those 10 largest, only registered nurses had an average wage above the U.S. mean, which is $21.74 per hour adjusted. And annual mean wages for the rest of the 10 largest, excluding registered nurses, ranged from $18,000 a year to $33,000 a year. So the fastest growing jobs are some of the lowest paying jobs, and they're still really not very accessible to this population that's on the street. They're more jobs to, you know, maintain the status quo of the working poor, which is a very large category in the U.S. I can't find very good numbers on it because it's a relatively new classification of folks, even though it's not a new phenomenon by any means. There's been working poor since there's been this sort of feudal capitalism setup that we have in the U.S. right now. So, and I'd qualify myself among, you know, working poor, where you're making ends meet but not really having much left for investment, for saving, for starting businesses and things like that. You're kind of paycheck to paycheck on the wage treadmill. And that's most of the people I know as well. And people pointed out when I started posting about this on Facebook, they were saying, you know, I don't have the money. A friend of mine, Aaron, pointed out that he gets hit up by panhandlers at least probably 10 times a day, which I'd say is pretty accurate for me too. I live and work in downtown Spokane, and I have for 5 years, and that number's just gone up. So he pointed out if he gives a dollar to each of these people, that's $70 a week for him, which is out of his range. So even if he wants to give folks on the street money, which that's another thing to talk about, it's difficult because he can't really afford to be doing it. But so it ends up pitting kind of the working poor against the non-working poor and the, you know, extremely impoverished, which is just part of the whole pyramid of capitalism, in my opinion. People are trying to climb up, and in order to do that, sometimes you have to step on or ignore those in the group just below you. You know, similarly to how the shrinking middle class and the upper middle class, the socially, the financially mobile, which is a small group of people, I would argue, in the U.S., see the working poor and say, well, you just need to work a little harder to get a promotion and you can join us up here. Even though in the fields of retail, customer service, fast food preparation, there's not a lot of upward mobility. So you see that manifested all across this system. And, you know, that's really the argument I want to make today, and just the direction I'd like to take this conversation, is that the problem isn't panhandling. The problem isn't really homelessness. It's poverty. And the creator of poverty on such a vast level is our capitalist system, like it or not. You know, it's not as though, you know, in nature, there's just people who have less than others. It's designed that way. If someone has less, then someone else has more. And whether or not that's a result of hard work or, you know, traditional values and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, it still shows that the system we have is fundamentally based on inequality. That's inequality that we're always going to have as long as we have a system like this, and pushing the undesirables out of sight isn't really going to do anything about it. So that's a short introduction to the panhandling ordinance in Spokane, Washington, where we're located, and just a couple ordinances around the country. Some of the pushback, there's been a lot of lawsuits on free speech grounds. So they're trying to define, in many places, define what is aggressive begging. So that's a, even when you look on Wikipedia, this is pretty telling. When you just look up panhandling on Wikipedia, it directs you to two separate pages, begging and aggressive panhandling. So these are kind of the two classifications that we get. And so some places are trying to define what is aggressive panhandling. Is it, you know, touching someone when you ask them? Is it repeated asks? Is it a tone of voice? There's an ordinance in somewhere in Louisiana that, let's see, they crack down, they say that using foul language while begging classifies it as aggressive solicitation. So basically you can't swear on the streets in the French Quarter, begging or not, because that's aggressive interaction on the street. And I think that's just something that's really hard to legislate. It's probably going to be unfairly applied, as many laws like this are. And it sort of harkens back to the problems that we've had in Spokane with street performers and the noise ordinances of downtown, where is it limiting speech to say that you can't perform at a certain decibel level, even though the police are not given decibel meters, so they need to arbitrarily decide what's an acceptable level? This is obviously targeted toward street performers instead of, you know, for example, the speakers that blast music out of the front of the mall, even just the large air conditioning units, truck noise, all of the very loud noise of downtown, you know, isn't going to be enforced with this ordinance. It's really to target street musicians, and I would argue that it's built to target some specific street musicians in Spokane. Again, just to brush them out of sight, even though in, you know, when you think of a vibrant city, when you think of a downtown that people want to be in, there's life and performance and interesting things happening on the street. And to sterilize a downtown region, as I think has been attempted pretty thoroughly in our city, I think is counterproductive. No one wants to spend time in, you know, empty sidewalks or sidewalks that are just filled with people holding bags walking from one store to another, because that's simply not interesting. It doesn't reflect the diversity of a city. It doesn't reflect the culture of a city. It doesn't really reflect anything other than this really bland, uniform, homogenized corporate culture of, you know, our downtown could be any downtown because we have Nordstrom, a Macy's, you know, chain restaurants, all of the things that you're comfortable with, and you won't have to witness anything out of the ordinary or difficult to process or, you know, creative or vibrant. There's pluses and minuses to legislating things like that. And, you know, part of the argument, let's try to find the quote. Councilman Mike Allen, who helped bring this forward, who's a council person on Spokane City Council, he said something to the effect, I'd like to find the direct quote to not misquote him, but basically had a quote about protecting the gateways of our town. So, which is basically a nice way of saying when potential business people come to town or potential investors, we don't want them to see people begging by the freeway as their first glimpse of the city. And that really reveals a lot of the true motives of this, I think. So, and he, someone on the council, I need to find the direct quote, I'm sorry I don't have it, made a comment about, you know, it makes people uncomfortable to come downtown and spend time downtown. But you can't legislate the discomfort out of a situation. It's the fact that there's, I think people should be made uncomfortable by poverty and they should be faced with it. It can't just be an abstract statistic that you hear on the news at night, you know, unemployment's rising, whatever that means today, you know, and then you say, oh, well, and move on to the next thing. It, to see it every day and to see, wow, there's a lot of people persistently out on the streets, and to see that in your downtown kind of forces the analysis of why are these people here? Even if the reactions, you know, bitterness and hostility of, oh, get a job, you're still faced with that. And eventually you'll still be faced to deal with the fact that maybe they can't get a job. Maybe that's not the real issue here. So, and I mean, there's a lot of things that make me uncomfortable about downtown. I don't appreciate really aggressive advertising. You know, I don't want huge billboards. I don't want flashing LED billboards all over downtown. They're still there. You know, they make me uncomfortable. They're a side effect of capitalism. I'm not going to try to legislate them away, though, and say, you know, I'm going to ban this business's speech, you know, in billboard form, much as I may like to. You know, it's their right to do that in the system we have. So it's really the same thing. I'm offended by, you know, restaurants pumping out gross deep fried smells onto the sidewalk that I have to walk through. But, you know, I'm not trying to organize around getting rid of that. Living in a city, living in a civilization with others is bound to lead to some level of discomfort for everyone, I guess is my point there in my little, you know, bacon-scented sidewalk rant. If you have any input on this topic, I'd love to hear your calls. The number in the studio is 509-747-3807. We've got quite a bit of time and quite a lot to cover, but I feel like this hasn't been a very organized rant, but I hope that it's getting the information out there. Something really interesting that I found just in doing research about panhandling ordinances everywhere, Worcester, Massachusetts. There's a person who has a blog titled Pie and Coffee in Worcester, and they do a lot of work. A friend of mine linked to this on his Facebook. Thank you, David, for doing that. And they helpfully go through the 57 pages of ordinance in Worcester and, you know, look through the letter and find out the highlights for us. So part of their plan, which I think is a good plan, is that a social worker will do outreach to panhandlers and connect them with services. They'll also be the kind of eyes on the street for the city who can do reports on panhandling and give accurate numbers. And they work with the police if the occasion arises. So there's a social worker providing probably a more comfortable medium for this population that's on the street than a police officer coming up to them. Many of these people have very negative histories with law enforcement and want nothing to do with speaking to them, which may be justified in many situations. So considering, especially in Spokane, if you look at the history of mentally ill folks, homeless or not, and the treatment by the police, you know, leading to at least two deaths that I can recall off the top of my head, being Otto Zem and I can't remember the young man's name, who, while eventually fell from the Monroe Street Bridge after being tasered by police as they attempted to talk him down from suicide on the bridge. And he ended up having pretty severe mental illness. So those are two examples of why if you're mentally ill and or on the street, you may not want to go to the police as your first resort. So anyway, in Worcester, they're including a social worker in their outreach team, which I think is a good idea. There's also, they're implementing a phone number that people can call to complain about aggressive panhandling, and those reports will go to the social worker rather than law enforcement, which I think was a compromise that was worked in. It wasn't, they say here, it wasn't part of the previous anti-panhandling ordinance, but that social work groups and others lobbied for it to be included. I think that's a great idea because it leads more to actual solutions, or at least temporary solutions of getting people into housing if that's their desire, connected to services, etc. And I think, you know, with a lot of panhandlers and people who are doing this as a lifestyle, it's not a lack of resources or a lack of information. Most people who have been on the street for any degree of time kind of know, you know, the feeding schedule around, and you can eat, I think, every day in Spokane, thanks to, you know, Chef Gus at Central UMC, all kinds of church groups that do feedings, organizations like Food Not Bombs. You know, there's a lot of feeding of people going on. There's a lot of resources that can be met. The shelters are consistently over capacity, but people know that there's resources, which kind of backs up the point that a lot of panhandling is done to support addictions. And that's true. But I still think the bottom line is that it's a personal moral and financial social decision whether or not you want to give money to panhandlers, whether or not you want to carry around, you know, granola bars and give those out if you have concerns about people being hungry on the street. I don't think it's anything that needs to be legislated away. So the other interesting part of this Worcester plan is that they're doing a public education campaign, which is basically toward, you know, quote, normal people, regular citizens, telling them not to give to panhandlers for the reason that it mostly fuels addictions. So, and the blogger says, this was pretty much the only part of the previous anti-panhandling campaign that was implemented, and it was an embarrassment and a failure. I posted on my show page on Facebook, which is facebook.com/praxisradio. I posted a vandalized billboard from that community where the original billboard says, panhandling is not the solution. Please give to a local charity. Someone came through and painted over the word solution problem, and they added, and stop anti-poor laws. So I posted that on my page, and apparently, you know, it didn't really work very well for people. It's a hard issue to message in a simple advertisement. But the city manager's letter in Worcester notes that, quote, several social agencies, including the United Way, have agreed to work with the city on a public education campaign. I'm not trying to disparage the work that United Way does or anything, but that's kind of like Nike getting behind a pro running campaign. Because, you know, it might sell them some shoes. So if the whole thrust of the campaign is to give to local charities, then yeah, the charities are going to be involved with that public education campaign that discourages from giving directly to panhandlers. So, and that brings up a new point, which is the charities that we have. There's a ton of homelessness, I'd say response type of charities, Union Gospel Mission being one of the more famous. Though an issue I have with Union Gospel Mission is both some of the mandatory Christian components of it, and they don't serve the disabled population, which is a hugely disproportionate amount of the homeless population at large. I have some stats I'll go through later that kind of highlight that, because you must work in their center. And it's really kind of discouraging. I mean, they even say in their promotional things that they support, you know, walking homeless folks, which, I mean, I don't know, if I were disabled and on the street, I'd be fairly insulted by that, because it suggests that if you can't do manual labor for us, you're worthless and we can't help you because you have nothing to offer us. There's still a lot that these other people could offer, I think, to organizations like that. So Union Gospel Mission, there's a lot of church groups, a large amount of homeless outreach is done by the faith population. So, but the issue with that is that, you know, through a charity, it's always going to be intervention based. Most of the work's not preventative, with some exceptions that do things like transitional housing and all of that. And it also, my issue with the solution of donating to charity as a way to solve social problems is that it makes the whole thing abstract. It really just takes it out of the realm of the practical and the tangible and puts it into this kind of feel-good level where you can say, I did my part. I gave money to X charity, and now I don't have to worry about homeless people. And now I don't want to look at them downtown. I want this ordinance to get them out because I already did my part. I'm not supporting panhandlers. I'm supporting a charity that, you know, I'm probably not personally auditing them and seeing where the money's going. A lot of them do good, honest work, but a lot of the large ones, like UNICEF, when you see this on a larger global scale, do have a lot of very highly paid executives within that charity, and it starts to look more and more like the corporate model that we have on the business end of things. So that's a frustration that I have, and I think it's especially prevalent. I never really thought about it in the local level. I think of it more when I see people donating to organizations like UNICEF, because they can feel better about helping, you know, starving children in Africa, or, you know, fill in your cause here. But, you know, those kids sure seem to have been starving for a long time, despite organizations like that being around and receiving millions upon millions of dollars for all that time. So kind of makes you wonder where the money's going and if that's really an effective thing to do, to just pour money on things. So that's another point that we have about giving to charities instead of just directly to people or at all. So that is yet another angle of this. And so talking about the shelters, we have a huge number of homeless shelters in most cities, you know, mostly nonprofit or church related, and they do a lot of good work. And I think it's kind of unfair, a lot of the critiques that they receive about not serving everyone, because I think, especially in Spokane, because this has been such a persistent problem, people have really tried. I mean, there's shelters where, you know, there can't be men because of domestic violence concerns. There's shelters where you can't be currently on drugs or alcohol to check in. There's some shelters with no limitations to try to be a catch-all for those that don't work, for specific groups. There's some specifically for veterans. There's all kinds of specialized shelters, but we see time and time again that across America, they're not enough. And especially more so with homes being foreclosed upon and jobs being lost. We're getting a call right now, so I'm going to take that call real quick. Caller, you're on the air.
Taylor, this is John Waite.
How are you, John?
I'm good.
I'm good.
Help me up.
Hmm?
I'm calling your show because of this whole panhandling thing.
All right. What do you think?
It's a distraction.
From
the realities of what we're dealing with. Hopefully you can't hear my radio in the background, can you?
I can't. No, you're fine.
You know, as example, John Snyder just sent out a little notice about the police ombudsman being dismissed,
mm-hmm.
Tim Burns, which is a huge giant thing for us to deal
it
with
is,
in Spokane,
yeah.
And the difficulties of our police and the police guilds. And then, of course, people like me worry about the fact that we run like a $10 million budget deficit every year in Spokane, and every year we just cut. And so my thought is that some people like to do these things to get us from paying attention to the real issues. Not that this isn't important.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Oh. So trying to put it in the lens of, you know, this is a capitalism problem, not really a city problem.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I actually am like a big free speech person, and luckily to me, this little issue here actually kind of like shows that the corporatists and the elite people some kind of will band together, regardless of politics,
mm-hmm.
protect their turf.
Yeah.
If you happen to be a conspiracy kind of person, you might believe something like
which
that.
Which you may know that I am. yeah. Well, there seems to be kind of the lines have sort of been drawn, I think, in downtown where there's kind of a 10 to 12 square block radius. That's the business zone. And we're going to push everything out of there
right.
to directly outside of there.
And I don't quite even, I don't know if that's even like necessary on their part. I actually liked way back there was a kind of a public effort to explain, you know, you shouldn't be giving money to panhandlers because most of them aren't going to use that money properly. But if you want to help, you could give money to local charities or government institutions, or there are other ways to help. And I think that's a better way to go,
mm-hmm.
you know, because this is a right, you know, it's so interesting. I was thinking as you were talking that corporations have the right to go out and spend money and bribe elected officials and legislatures under the pretense of the First Amendment, the freedom of speech. But a panhandler can't sit on a corner and say, you know, give me a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Well, and a performer can't say, here's my, you know, art or what I want my contribution to be. And
right.
if you want to financially compensate me, here's a bucket. You know, right. that's even worth it. Because that's a lot more probably culturally beneficial than campaign spending ever could be.
That's why I worry that our city leaders, regardless of ideology, are trying to kind of, you know, A, they're trying to distract us, and B, they're placating the powers that be, you know,
mm-hmm.
the people in that little area that you suggested. So.
Yep.
That's my two cents on this complicated issue.
Well, thanks, as always, for your
good show.
Thank you.
Very thoughtful, and it's like most problems in the world, they're not easily solved, and they're not something that you can just, like, pin a slogan on a bumper sticker and solve that problem.
That would be great, though.
I know. I'm going to work on that. I'm going to produce those bumper stickers.
Ooh, there you go. There's a business plan. But
anyway, keep up the good work.
Thank you. Have a great day.
I want other people to call in, so I want to hear what other people have to say.
Yeah, if you'd like to call in and let me know what you have to say, the number on air is 509-747-3807. I finally got answering the phone down to a science. So
paying attention
to the lights. All right, bye, John. Thanks. All right, that was John Waite weighing in on this panhandling issue. That's an interesting angle that it's a distraction. No one's really brought that up yet other than him on Facebook. But I do want to mention the other issue that's coming up tonight. The ombudsman position that has been, you know, much criticized in Spokane for not having the proper independent investigative authority. Basically, for those who aren't familiar, in a few years back, after a disturbing level of police brutality incidents, the city instituted an office of the police ombudsman, who's supposed to be an independent oversight for the police department. However, the only real authority ours was given was to oversee the police department's investigation of itself. So if they're withholding evidence or if they're ignoring certain leads, so is the ombudsman. You know, it's not an independent investigative branch, which is what most people were advocating for here. So nonetheless, an ombudsman without teeth is better than no ombudsman at all, I would argue. And now the position's not being continued in the next year. They're dropping the office of the ombudsman at city council. So that's another interesting thing to go hear about and talk about if you care about it tonight. The city council meeting is as always at 6 p.m. You can sign up to testify either on the panhandling ordinance or really anything during the public comment period. So I recommend if you've never gone just to go for the experience. I will be there recording for KYRS local news and possibly for some use on this show. And it's an interesting experience, and I think tonight will probably be a fairly lively discussion given all of the items on the agenda. So back to where we were before that call came in, just talking about homelessness generally and why the shelters don't have enough capacity. So the U.S. Conference of Mayors does a really good, they did a study on homelessness And it's good because it was taken from 25 cities of a variety of sizes and a variety of locations. They're Los Angeles, Miami, Cleveland, Phoenix, Minneapolis, Trenton, Denver, Louisville, Philadelphia, Boston, Nashville, Des Moines, Dallas, Seattle, Santa Monica, Salt Lake City, Charlotte, Mount Pleasant, St. Paul, Portland, Providence, Gastonia, and San Francisco. And they aggregate all of this data from these different cities, and they monitor the different trends in homelessness. And they use a lot of good data and good indicators, I think, of what homelessness is actually about. And they also do a food assistance one. So this is directly from the U.S. Mayor's report. In most cities, the demand for shelter exceeded capacity on certain nights during the year. Cities were reluctant to turn away persons seeking shelter, particularly families with children. In Providence, Seattle, Miami, Santa Monica, Portland, and Trenton, families are issued motel vouchers on nights when there are no available shelter beds. Cities also have policies in place to increase their shelter capacity during high-demand periods. In Salt Lake City, shelters permit families to stay in conference rooms and on cots in hallways when no beds are available. In Philadelphia, recreation centers are converted into placement areas for the homeless during winter months. This year, increased demand prompted San Francisco to open its family winter shelter 2 months earlier than scheduled. Despite all these efforts, cities occasionally must turn away individuals and families seeking shelter. Several cities have waiting lists for shelter and often have to help families find a temporary space until shelter beds become available. A survey in Los Angeles found that 31% of persons who tried to access shelter were turned away due to lack of bed availability. So that's 31%. That's in 2007. So that's before, you know, the before everything really hit the fan and all of the, you know, patterns of shelter usage, homeless families, and all of that have simply gone up since then. So you'd think that that problem would probably increase. So on an average night in all the aggregate of these 25 cities, there are 543 people in families living on the streets, 12,000 single adults, and 268 unaccompanied youth. Those are the main three groups that they use. Of those, you know, a separate group that's much larger, approximately 9,000 are in emergency families are in emergency shelter, 23,000 single adults are in emergency shelter, and 352 unaccompanied youth. And then the really interesting thing for me, I think that's pretty telling, because people mostly based on assumption and just personal experience have a tendency to assess, you know, this is what all panhandlers are doing. This is the reason why all homeless people are homeless, because it's what I've seen. And most of the times what people will say is that they have an addiction. They're just buying beer with your money that you're giving them, so don't give it to them. And that's the main reason that I hear. Or they're too lazy to get a job and they think it's easier to panhandle. So this survey, something that's really good is that they actually survey the homeless population and find out, why are you homeless? And what, you know, what are your needs that aren't being met? So, and if anyone's trying to call in right now, the number to call in is 509-747-3807. I think, Council President Ben Stuckert's about to call that number right now. So we'll hopefully hear from him on the panhandling ordinance, hopefully the ombudsman as well. So basically this study shows that 26% of people experiencing homelessness in 2008 were severely mentally ill. So that's a quarter right there. And that's a population we know isn't being served by the social services we have in this city, because mental health's been cut consistently for a long time. 19% of folks that are homeless are in fact employed. So the get a job argument doesn't really work there. I'm going to take a short, here, one moment. Hello? Hi there, Ben. Could you call back on the on-air phone? It is 747-3807. Yes, indeed. And for anyone else out there who wants to call in, that's the number. All right, thanks. All right, we'll be joined in just a minute by Council President Ben Stuckert, who was calling a different phone. So sorry for the interruption and thanks for your patience. 15% of the folks experiencing homelessness were domestic violence victims, another group that is cut services for them are cut. 13% are physically disabled, 13% are veterans, 2% are HIV positive. So those are some stats to chew on, and I'm going to take this call.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hello, everybody.
Hi, so this is Council President Ben Stuckert, correct?
Yes, this okay. is Council, yes.
Okay, not a clever impersonator. So
no.
Can you just, in a nutshell, give a summary of the city's idea with the panhandling ordinance?
I believe a compromise that'll be voted on tonight will say that people can't cross the plain into the street, and it'll be limited to a geographic area of downtown and our gateways, which is all the entrances and exits to I-90.
Okay, and that's a compromise from what originally?
Originally it was going to be citywide.
Okay. So, so the rationale that I've heard is that it's a public safety concern, right?
Correct. People, when they step into the roadway, whether it's the Guild School, the firefighters with their boots, or a panhandler, they can still hold their signs and stand on the sidewalk. But once you step into the roadway, it's a road hazard, safety hazard.
Okay. So, and is that not covered by, like, pedestrian laws that are already in place? Or is it, like, a strengthening of those?
It's a strengthening of the current road interference law.
Okay.
Right now, you can go into the road, and then it's complaint-driven, where this is a misdemeanor if you step into the road.
Okay. So, is there a group that's kind of advocating for harsher panhandling legislation on the city level?
I think this actually, I have not gotten any groups that have contacted me. I have not heard any specifics. What I get is comments from, the best one I have is 2 months ago, I had a gentleman call me. He'd just gotten back to Seattle. He'd picked his son up at Gonzaga, and he extolled the beauty of Spokane for about 10 minutes before he launched into what he sees at our gateways, which is, one, physically, they're not the prettiest places when you come off, and then he got accosted by panhandlers repeatedly while he was in Spokane, and it's the first thing that visitors see, or companies when they want to relocate here, because let's be honest, there's a poverty problem in Spokane, an mm-hmm. enormous poverty problem, and the way to attack that is economic growth. Mm-hmm. We're not going to attack the poverty problem by either allowing or disallowing panhandling. It's going to come through economic growth. And our gateways are the first thing people see. And so the intention of the council is to try to do everything possible to beautify Spokane. But, you know, I understand the economic and poverty issues, so I met with the head of the Homeless Coalition and I met with the head of Homeless Outreach for Spokane Mental Health. Both of those people are going to come down and testify tonight, is mm-hmm. my understanding. And in my conversations with them, the homeless population is different than the population that's panhandling.
Mm-hmm. And that's what
they're
I've
not the same,
seen, too.
And they're not opposed to these ordinances. And so I have my own personal issues with poverty, the way that we treat people that are homeless, that I don't think are right. I have a strong ethic on that. It's one of the reasons I ran. But then when I sit with the experts in the field, who's the head of homeless outreach that works two blocks from the Division Street Gateway, and he says, Ben, those aren't my population. That's not the target population. Those aren't the homeless people in Spokane. Those are people that are getting dropped off there and panhandling for a living. And then I also hear it from people that are visiting from out of town. I can't really be opposed to that.
Okay, I see that point. What's hard about the, you know, defining the area is that you would think that people would just go to just outside that area, and that, you know, as the city grows and as hopefully, you know, the downtown core expands, that you'd have to expand that area too. And it would just kind of continue to push the problem outward like we've seen in Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, we're now going to Tacoma as opposed to 3 or 4 years ago. I see a huge increase in panhandling there and a huge decrease in Seattle, you know, because of the stuff they've passed, so.
And I did read that comment of yours on Facebook this morning, and I guess I don't have firsthand experience with what it used to be like in Seattle and what Tacoma used to be like. I don't know if 4 or 5 years ago, I was paying as much attention to this issue. Mm-hmm. So I can't really speak to that, but I do know that the downtown area is the busiest area, and those freeway entrances are where people, there's always lines of cars.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, and I was talking to one of my fellow council members this morning, and the real solution is if we don't want panhandlers out, nobody should give to them. But that was their point about this ordinance, is like, legislating it away isn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
People just need to not give if we're not comfortable with them there, because as long as people give them money, they're going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this the most important issue in the city right now? I don't know, but I was going through my old emails, and besides streets and the police, this is what I get the most comments on, is panhandlers at our gateways.
Hmm. Wow.
So I find it, and it's not like some cabal of downtown business people emailing me and saying this. This is normal, ordinary citizens.
Hmm. Well, that's a good clarification then. It's, yeah.
And I haven't gotten a bunch of downtown business people throwing emails at me that we have to pass this at all.
Okay.
The most people we are hearing from are people concerned that the most are the Guild School and the MDA, and still the Boot people, worried about their ability as nonprofits to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have gotten some concerns, but not an inordinate amount about that. What we're really doing is just hiding poverty and not really comfortable confronting it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I agree with that to an extent, but what we have to do to stop the poverty in Spokane is grow our economy. And if our gateways are impeding progress in Spokane because of the panhandlers, part of the way to economic growth is to clean up our city. Rob Higgins, who was a city council president in the early 2000s, preaches that if the city does the basics and keeps our city beautiful, that we're more attractive for businesses.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm not a business person by nature, but I would think that also, seeing some of, never mind. I'm going to take back what I was about to say. I was going to say that seeing some of the poverty would encourage you to, to help contribute to the economic growth here, but that's not a very positive to your bottom line, way of thinking about it, because it's kind of...
Yeah, I think we as a society need to, we don't really talk about prevention, and I think that's becoming an even harsher word since the economic downturn has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's not government money to start working on things like prevention. But, we need to invest in those social services that take care of those people in our society.
Mm-hmm.
We need to invest in economic development and good, we're not talking economic development like a McDonald's. We're talking economic development like manufacturing jobs that we
mm-hmm.
used to have up in Northeast Spokane. We've lost 5 huge manufacturers up there. And that's, I've been working since I got elected. There's a public development authority we've created up in Northeast Spokane. And I just met this morning with a group of Hilliard people that are doing some pretty innovative projects that will help increase the economy up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to make that my focus, but then sometimes things like panhandling get brought up by other council members and it kind of becomes a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
That's
interesting. That's exactly what the last caller just said, was that it was a distraction. So,
right. We need to be focusing on what can we do as a city to attract good-paying union jobs to our town. We need to talk about how can we attract more businesses? How can we keep the young people in Spokane? What do we need to do to make our city more vibrant so when somebody graduates from Whitworth or Gonzaga, they don't leave and go back to Seattle?
Mm-hmm.
How do we keep them here? How do we have smart people like yourself create a culture where it's good to be 20 and in Spokane? I myself
mm-hmm.
left. I was gone from the time I was 24 till I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because I wanted to leave and go experience other places that I thought were more liberal than the Spokane. But I came
mm-hmm.
back. We need people to stay here.
And that's something I appreciate, because you have been an opponent of the downtown noise ordinance, right? Am I correct?
I think it was a 6-1 vote. I've been in close contact with William Cruz, one of our street musicians,
mm-hmm.
since it passed, making sure that he's not targeted. I actually got a case with him that the ombudsman and me are working on.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the noise ordinance itself, I don't think is a bad thing, but I think that things like that can be misused
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
targeted incorrectly.
Well, and it's hard when there's not the tools to use it the way it's meant to be used. I was talking about that earlier, but that's something where, you know, having performance downtown and that contributes to what you were just talking about, a more,
right.
you know, positive environment for young people to be here, so.
Okay, I have a meeting I'm supposed to run
in
3 minutes.
All right.
But I think the mayor will make an announcement on the ombudsman at some point today.
Okay.
And I think that announcement will be basically that I'm not going to need a resolution because he'll be doing everything I asked for in it before the end of the day, my understanding.
Okay.
So.
Well, we'll have to check in, and I'll be at City Council tonight recording it for KYRS Local News, so.
Excellent. Look forward to seeing you.
All right. Thanks so much for joining me.
All right. Okay.
Right, so that was City Council President Ben Stuckert offering some clarification on, you know, what exactly the intention is. And I tend to trust him. I think he's an honest guy. I talked with him a lot pre-politics, you know, which leads me to, you know, trust him quite a bit. So I get that it is average people complaining about panhandling, probably combined with some businesses as well. So, yeah, it's an interesting look at it. I just wanted to, really quick, before we end the hour, the same U.S. Conference of Mayors study does a really great, succinct description of what are the causes of homelessness among single adults and unaccompanied youth. The top five, which make up 89% of the total results, sorry, I had to do some math, are substance abuse, lack of affordable housing, mental illness, poverty, and unemployment. The others at the bottom of the list are family disputes, low-paying jobs, and emancipation from foster care. The way I see it, those are all tied in to being on the losing end of a crony capitalist system. You know, you're stressed, so, and there's a large availability of cheap substances to use. You know, substance abuse is a great way to cope with that stress for a lot of people. Lack of affordable housing has a lot to do with ownership and the way ownership's divided. Mental illness, we're the country with the highest rates of mental illness, possibly because we have such a, you know, self-contradictory schizophrenic system and idea of our system. You know, we like to perpetuate the idea that it's all gravy and it's all, you know, peaches and cream over here in America and anyone can do anything they want, and then people see what they're actually able to do, and the schism between the two is pretty, it's enough to make most people feel at least a little crazy, as it were. But, you know, the mentally ill are a large part of our population, and funding all across the nation has been cut for programs, support, and treatment. We end up with a lot of mentally ill people in prison, etc., or just turned onto the streets. Then poverty, obviously, is kind of the overarching, I think it'd be the overarching cause with all of these causes. And unemployment is kind of the obvious one, but it's fifth on the list. So, and then there's also a graph on the causes of family homelessness, which is a separate category where there's a family with children. The number one there is lack of affordable housing, followed by poverty and unemployment, followed by low-paying jobs and domestic violence. Domestic violence, no one's immune from that situation, but it tends to be a problem, you know, more so of poorer populations, partially due to the stress induced by being really poor in this system and having to struggle to survive, and the substance abuse issue as well. So lots of problems. And yeah, and Ben was talking about, you know, economic growth being the solution to this, and I think that's true to an extent, but I don't think we can continue with the type of capitalism and sort of service-based economy that we have. I'm glad he mentioned manufacturing. We need actual tangible jobs, not just, you know, customer service, food service, and retail. Those aren't really contributing anything real. It's part of the U.S. as just a consumption drain on the rest of the world, not really putting out anything else new, really leading us to a pretty tragic end, as you may have heard Gore Vidal talking about on the previous program, David Barsamian, on alternative radio. I also wanted to talk about where this issue of homelessness and charity intersects with Christianity and Christian values, because we know, you know, if you want to talk about Jesus and you want to talk about Christianity, he was in the streets with people, not donating to an abstract charity to help them. And that's about, I can only really say that one sentence because I'm running slightly over time. But thank you so much for listening, and hopefully we can get some folks out to council tonight to testify or at least listen and learn more about this issue. Distraction though it may be, it's still a good opportunity to bring up larger problems, such as economic inequality, unfairness of capitalism, and other fun issues like that. So thanks so much for tuning in. This has been Praxis. You're listening to Thin Air Community Radio, KYRS, Medical Lake, Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Have a great day.